I could improve on eventually, too.
The blade aura moved easily enough, but it was powered by runes that were designed to continuously emit energy all around the sword. The moment I stopped concentrating, the aura snapped back to its original shape. And every moment I pushed on the aura, it took up just a little bit of my mana. Someone like Karras probably had hundreds or thousands of times my mana. He didn't have to worry about the cost of shaping an aura. But for me, I'd have to figure out a smarter way to use this technique. I swung in the air experimentally, concentrating as I moved the blade. I imagined an opponent, and in the moment before I made contact, I pushed on the blade aura, compressing it. For just a moment, the transference aura overlapped with itself, giving it twice as much force. Good. I repeated the process, cutting and thrusting. I could see numerous applications for this. Focusing the blade aura to add more force was a great offensive strategy. But if I could manipulate the aura of a blade, I could do it with other auras too. Mara, punch me real quick. Marissa turned away from practicing with her own aura blade and grinned at me. Sure. I chuckled. You don't have to sound that excited. Marissa waved a hand dismissively. That's what friends are for. Go to a particular place you want me to hit you. Karras looked on with raised eyebrows. I shook my head. Surprise me. She jabbed me in the ribs before I was ready. I doubled over in spite of both shield sigils and two shrouds protecting me.
Oh, goddess! Was that too hard? I was expecting you to have a trick or something.
I raised a finger and motioned for her to wait while I coughed.
Just wasn't ready.
I took a breath, activating the Ring of Regeneration. She probably hadn't hurt me seriously, but the ring gave me an immediate feeling of relief from the pain. I straightened, bracing myself.
Okay, one second.
I took a breath. Then I extended another thread of mana from my hand, touching a different rune.
Okay, let me try this.
I closed my eyes and concentrated, pushing mana through the thread. The barrier that Marissa had just cracked began to mend itself back together. Marissa blinked, watching the cracks in the barrier disappear.
How are you doing that without touching the sigil?
I made a tiny thread of mana and attached it. It connects my attunement to the sigil, letting me feed power straight into the sigil and keep my hands free for other things.
Oh, that sounds useful.
Wish I had transference mana so I could do the same thing. Marissa grinned.
Shame you still can't take a punch, though.
I groaned. I said I wasn't ready.
You came up with that just now?
Karras raised an eyebrow at me. I shrugged a shoulder. Seemed like an obvious application of your technique.
It might be for you, but not everyone is as good at extrapolating from existing styles as you are. You've got a good tactical mindset. I'll try to keep teaching you more foundation techniques like that, and hopefully you can continue to expand on them when you need to.
Was he complimenting me? I wasn't sure how to handle that. I wasn't used to teachers being, well, nice.
Thanks.
So, what's next?
Next, you practice what I just taught you. Don't get too far ahead of yourself. I noticed you refocusing your aura mid-swing. That's a good exercise. Get used to doing it. Eventually, you'll be able to do it almost unconsciously, and that'll make it harder to predict.
Marissa rolled on her heels.
Okay, but what's going to be after that?
Karras scratched the back of his head.
Haven't thought that far. I'm not really used to teaching people my fighting style. Maybe spell striking?
No, you're probably not going to get a lot of use out of that yet.
Blade splitting would probably be the next logical step.
Or spell cutting. Or maybe aura extension.
Oh, blade splitting. I like the sound of that.
Marissa grinned, turning toward me.
Well, Cadence, you want to try mixing this into a little sparring?
I shifted into a defensive stance.
You bet. Let's get started.
We kept practicing, but Karras didn't teach us any more of those interesting, if unusual-sounding, techniques before it was time to get ready for our final exam. We did, however, get considerably better at aura compression, and in my case, I got in more practice with recharging my shield sigil with mana threads, too. I drowned myself with practice. It was easier to do than to think about the possible implications of what my mother was really up to, or about the things my father had hidden from me. We had a couple brief strategy meetings, but without the details of our mission assignment, we didn't have much to go on. Sarah and Patrick gathered a little bit of information from other students. We weren't strictly forbidden from discussing this test like we had been with the fake Spire exams. Unfortunately, no one knew much about it until some of the first students came back from their test, and every group Sarah talked to was given a completely different scenario. One team was told to reinforce a fortress that was under siege. Another was given the assignment to attack that same fortress and steal a flag from it. Another team was sent into a wilderness area and told to search for a magical item. That sounded similar to the test I'd taken with Marissa, but much larger in scale, and they'd been attacked by monsters repeatedly. Actual monsters, as far as they could tell. That made me a little nervous. I stopped by researcher to ask her for information. One of my new favorite clever bordering on cheating tactics. But apparently this test was so new that nothing had been filed on the assignments of specific groups. The teachers were making them up on a day-to-day basis. We tried to glean what we could from the returning teams, but we didn't learn much else. As such, we made our preparations as broad as possible. I considered some options for enchantments I could work on in the last couple days, but I'd been spending most of my time on practicing spells and combat rather than saving up money. I couldn't afford many more raw materials, so I didn't have a lot of options to work with. I wanted to upgrade the standard shield sigils and bring them up to the same level of power as the Phoenix ones, but they were standard school issue, and we weren't allowed to tamper with them. The Phoenix sigils were already close to their mana capacity, so I couldn't safely upgrade them much further either. Instead, I convinced Karis to help me out a bit. I handed him a small stack of coins. "You want pure silver?" he asked. "Yep, it has the best enchanting capacity per volume of anything we have on hand. Unless you can make Valden." He shook his head. "I can change some of the properties of a material, but I'm not sure what that would do to the enchantment capacity on it. Might make it better, might make it worse. Probably not worth the risk." I nodded. "Just extract the silver from the coins, then."
"That's easy enough. You want the results in any particular shape?"
I handed him my Phoenix sigil. "You can use that as a mold." The coins we were using weren't pure silver, but they had enough silver content that he could easily separate it from the rest of the metal and reshape it into what I wanted. After that, I actually went to the divinatory and did what I was supposed to be doing from the beginning. I had them run tests on the metal to check the enchantment capacity. I didn't want to take the risk that Karis's manipulations had somehow altered the metal in a way that would make it unstable. And it was always good to know if Karis was really doing what he claimed, too. I didn't have a lot of reason to distrust him on this subject, but I always liked to verify things in general. The metal was perfect. It was, as Karis claimed, perfectly pure silver. Silver had roughly 20 times the capacity of copper for an object of equivalent size. The Phoenix sigils I'd made before weren't pure copper, but they were close. That meant these new silver Phoenix sigils were going to have plenty of mana capacity to work with. More than I could possibly fill at my current skill level, which was good. I wasn't going to have time to make a full set before the test, but I got to work. The first enchantment was an upgraded shield. The next level of barrier had twice the total capacity of the previous Phoenix sigils, and four times that of a standard shield sigil. Next, I added a higher tier version of the self-recharging rune, which would allow these sigils to recharge within the same period of time as the old ones. Finally, the hardest part, a regeneration enchantment. I'd barely been practicing with life mana, but I knew how to use it now, and that meant I could make basic healing and regeneration enchantments without crystals. Up until this point, I'd only had two regeneration items to work with, the ring being the strongest, and the bracer I'd made by transferring the mana from the healing rock. Ultimately, I wanted everyone in my group to have some form of healing. Anything else was irresponsible. Also, it fit the Phoenix theme. That was important. The best I could manage was a higher-end carnelian enchantment, which made the regeneration function comparable to that of the bracer, but much weaker than the ring of regeneration. I still was concerned about wearing too many regeneration items at the same time, especially when I was working on enchanting. I hadn't forgotten what had happened with my hand. Still, regeneration was too useful of an ability to ignore. I just had to be a little more conscious of how much I was pushing myself while I was wearing regeneration items. I had a couple options on how I could distribute the items. Giving 4 out of 5 people a regeneration item of some kind was a good option, but keeping the ring in reserve for emergencies was another idea. I also considered giving the ring and one of the new sigils to Marissa, since she was our frontline fighter, and thus the most likely to take a lot of damage. Ultimately, after a discussion with the rest of the group, I went with spreading the healing out as much as possible. Marissa and I wore the newly made Silver Phoenix sigils. We were the most likely to be in close-range combat, and thus we needed the strongest shields we could get. I gave the regeneration bracer to Patrick and the ring of regeneration to Sarah. Patrick and Sarah both tended to burn through their mana quickly, so they were good options for the mana regeneration bracer. I ended up giving it to Patrick simply because we still weren't comfortable with the idea of feeding more mana into Sarah's body from an outside source, even if we were confident it was pure. We still weren't allowed to bring the extremely dangerous magical weapons for this test, so that meant leaving Ceres, Selyse Leanne, and the Dawnbringer replica behind. As such, I held on to the transference sword, and I handed the demigauntlet off to Sarah. She was getting used to casting spells again, but having a weapon to use was helpful. She took an ordinary dueling cane, too, just in case. After that, I had another decision to make. Was I willing to use the Jaden box during this test? Using the box would potentially save our entire team from having to carry camping equipment, as well as other general supplies. The Jaden box theoretically had a maximum capacity, but from what Karis explained, we hadn't gotten anywhere close to reaching it. It was clear we would be observed to some extent, but mostly by a second-year student, not a teacher. It wasn't likely they would recognize the box, or understand that I wasn't supposed to have it. But if I used it to carry all our gear, there was a high chance they would talk about that in a report to the teachers after our assignment was over. I talked to Sarah about it.
"What are the odds you could get the box officially released into your care?"
Sarah asked. "Doubt it. It was being researched by Professor Orden. With Orden gone, it's more likely they would want it returned to the Divinatory or maybe another member of her research team. I can claim that Orden wanted me to hold on to it, but ultimately it was never really her property in the first place." Sarah nodded.
"Okay. What about disguising it?"
I blinked. "Disguising it how?"
"There are other items that can hold things in a storage space, right?"
I frowned. "Sure. There are bags that can summon linked items that are held in another location. They're kind of the reverse of jump bells, but they summon everything around the anchor at once, and they're also extremely expensive."
"I'm a summoner. You're an enchanter. How plausible is it that we could have made one? Maybe with some unusual altered characteristics so we could summon one item at a time?"
I rubbed my chin. "I don't know. I haven't really studied that type of item in detail. Maybe we could sell another student on it, but I doubt a teacher would believe it."
"People tend to believe things if you don't give them a reason not to. As long as we can make a somewhat plausible explanation, I doubt they're going to dig into it. Our team is going to be carrying tons of items you made. Do you really think this one is going to stand out that much?"
I frowned. "I don't know. It's too hard for me to see from an outside perspective."
"Let's go with the middle route then. We'll still all bring bags, but we'll put most of the heavy stuff in your box. Tents, that sort of thing. If all you're storing for us is the tents, and you summon the tents all at once, it will probably look much less suspicious. Does that sound right?"
I nodded. "Sounds plausible. I'll see if I can study up on other storage enchantments tonight, just so I can have a plausible explanation if necessary. I'd rather still say we got the box from a teacher, though, and just not explain that it's the Jaden box. That would make having a higher-level item more likely. One more thing, though. If I'm going to do this, you need to go shop for our supplies. I'm not going to have time."
"You just hate shopping."
"That may be true, but I'm still making you do it." Sarah sighed.
"Fine. Deal."
I spent the rest of that evening studying storage and summoning enchantments, just as I'd promised. Much as I'd suspected, they were all higher level than I could possibly accomplish. The most basic were Sunstone level, and those just summoned a single grouping of items that were within a few feet of an anchor. Higher level enchantments were required for longer range, for a higher summoning area of effect, or for transporting larger objects. More importantly, however, I did find that it was possible to connect a single item to multiple anchors, and to tie summoning effects to different keywords for activation. In essence, it was possible to fake most of what the Jaden Box could do with standard enchanting, at least in theory. I didn't see any established item designs for multiple anchors, though. I was just speculating. The Jaden Box's function for summoning people was the hardest part to mimic, but I didn't intend to use that, so I didn't have to figure out a way to fake it. Learning this all was useful, both because I did intend to make a copy of the Jaden Box for myself in the future, and because it helped me realize just how potent the box was. Even if I used high-level enchantments to get similar functions, the box had the advantage of actually storing things. It didn't need anchors in other locations. That made it far more secure and easier to use. It did raise the questions of how and where the box was storing things. The notes had indicated that it was somehow utilizing an extra-dimensional space, which was outside of the scope of any enchantments in my books, even the advanced ones I'd taken from the restricted section. Maybe there were higher-level enchanters or summoners who knew more on the subject, but I didn't have the time to ask them. I finished my studying, packed the supplies that Sarah asked me to, and went to sleep. The next few days were going to be exhausting. On the way to the train station, I checked my mana levels. The Arbiter mark on my right hand was up to 138 of 138 mana, and the Enchanter mark on my forehead registered at 105 of 105. It had been about 2 weeks since I'd last marked down my progress, and I'd been going up by just about 1 point of mana per day. That wasn't the most I'd ever gained, but it was pretty consistent with what I'd been getting recently, and I was happy with it. It meant I was still on track for hitting Sunstone in the following year, which would put me easily toward the top of the class. Sarah had been pushing herself hard in training, and as a result, she'd recovered substantially. Her mana was up to 44 of 44, which was almost twice what it had been 2 weeks before. At that rate of growth, she'd be back to Carnelian level in another 2 weeks. It was unfortunate that she wouldn't get there in time for the exam. I didn't bother checking the others. They wouldn't have had significant changes in the last few weeks. We reached the train station. Finding our second-year student guide wasn't hard. She was holding up a giant sign that had Serpent Epsilon written on with sparkling letters. I hadn't even remembered our division name from the paperwork, but Sarah headed that direction immediately, and the rest of us followed her.
Hi, hi,
the student greeted us.
I'm Catherine, but you can call me Kathy. You must be, what is it, Siren?
Sarah. Sarah smiled and extended a hand.
I'm so bad with names.
The student fumbled with trying to hold the sign and shake Sarah's hand at the same time, failed, and dropped the sign with a loud thump.
Ack! I'm so sorry. Let me just...
Marissa picked up the sign and handed it back to Kathy.
Here you go. I'm Marissa, but you can call me Mara. Thank you! And that's a great name. I really like it.
I could already tell that this person was extremely nice, and that she would make me horribly uncomfortable. I was not good at handling people that were that energetic. Still, I made my introductions along with the others. Kathy visibly jumped when Jin said his name. Apparently he still had his mesmer abilities that prevented him from being noticed active. Maybe he couldn't turn them off? It was worth asking at some point. We boarded the train shortly thereafter. Mercifully, I was seated next to Jin, and we were both content to spend the trip in awkward silence, which was vastly preferable to awkward conversation. When we arrived at our destination, Kathy ushered us to a waiting carriage. Not one of the Kaleford horseless models, a traditional horse-driven one, which was still much more common in Velia. We piled in. The seats were barely large enough for all of us to fit. It would have comfortably accommodated 4 people, not six.
Apparently the school was willing to pay for some degree of transit, but not enough to make it comfortable.
I distracted myself from being pressed awkwardly close against my friends by looking out the window and admiring the scenery. We were outside of Beaufort now, heading north along a road from Calloway Junction toward what I presumed was the previously mentioned testing grounds. I'd initially assumed that we'd just be going to the same area where I'd helped Marissa with her test, but this was much farther to the north. Small cities gave way to towns, and towns gave way to farmland. The cobbled roads gave way to dirt. The broad plains and fields of crops vanished as the carriage entered a thick copse of trees.
"Vanway Forest," Sarah explained. "We're just south of the Vanreach Mountains, and, like the mountains, this forest is filled with monsters."
I remembered the Vanreach Mountains. That's where those herbs were that could be used to make a potion to heal nearly any injury. From Sarah's explanation, I surmised she'd been studying the whole area. She hadn't been making a big deal out of her condition now that she was able to speak and cast some spells again, but I was sure she still wanted a long-term solution. Her voice still sounded scratchy, like she had a perpetual cold, and her magic was still uncertain at best.
"This close to civilization?" Patrick asked. "Why not just move the army in to clear them out?"
Marissa scoffed.
"You kidding? They don't care about anyone this far from the city. So it, you think they want them all gone? Monsters got all sorts of parts people harvest. They're a natural resource. Soaring Wings keeps an eye on the borders and makes sure nothing creeps out too far."
I blinked. I wasn't surprised by that explanation, but I wouldn't have expected it from Mara. I had a tendency to underestimate her knowledge, probably because I assumed that her martial focus meant that she wasn't much for studying. It was easy to forget that she'd been assigned to the tortoise's heart, and that meant great academic scores, not just solid fighting abilities. That explanation did raise questions, though. If what they're looking for is monster hides and crystals and such, why not just breed monsters in captivity?
Marissa turned toward me while she explained.
"Some people do. Got a place just off campus that breeds ironweave spiders for making dueling tunics. Military's got big bases where they grow all sorts of them, too, both for harvesting and for summoners. Most monsters don't do well in captivity, though. Won't breed or don't grow as large."
She paused, making a contemplative expression.
"Maybe because of different food sources, or it might be that they get more mana from the nodes out in the wild. Either way, monsters in cages or on farms never get as big. That means they've got to leave some out here if they want bigger crystals, scales, that sort of thing."
"Also means they've got strict monster hunting laws,"
Jin chimed in. I was used to him by now, so I didn't jump at the sound of his voice, but it was still a little startling.
"That helps prevent any species from being driven to extinction. It's also why some people move out to the unclaimed lands. Easier to hunt monsters without restriction out there," Patrick elaborated. "It's just really, really dangerous."
That explanation made a degree of sense, but it still raised more questions in my mind. Would it be possible to find a way to breed full-sized monsters in captivity? I had some moral concerns about that, even if it was possible, though. Some monster species were extremely intelligent, even comparable to humans. I had to hope that the monsters they were talking about hunting were the bestial kind, or even less intelligent, like slimes and golems. There were certainly plenty of those, too. I was, of course, already aware that most people wouldn't care about that distinction the way that I did. The carriage finally halted a bit later, stopping at the base of a large stone structure. It was a jarring sight among the tall trees, which otherwise surrounded the whole area.
"We're here,"
Kathy announced.
"Finally get to stretch my legs."
We all groaned in agreement, exiting the carriage. We bid the carriage driver a safe trip back, and I offered him a few extra coins for having to deal with the obnoxiousness of listening to teenagers banter for hours. With that, we approached the building. Upon closer inspection, the structure was a three-story fortification surrounded by heavy stone walls. I saw the tower and wings symbol of the Soaring Wings flying from one of the two flags atop the structure, and the blue-on-black flag of the nation of Velia above it. Kathy approached first, waving at one of the two bronze-armored guards standing out front.
"Yo, Jody!"
These are my kids.
You made good time, but the other team is already here, Jody explained. I'll need your team to sign in here, then we'll head inside.
Other team? I already didn't like the sound of that. We signed some paperwork at the entrance to verify that we'd all arrived safely, and that we accepted the risks involved in this test.
Lovely.
Then Kathy led us inside.
Stay safe out there,
Jody said, slapping Kathy on the back.
Always do.
For some reason, though, Kathy's usual grin had faded. Her lips had flattened into a hard line. The fortification had several buildings inside, but Kathy led us to the central structure. Within, she took us to a large room that looked to be a cafeteria. Inside, we found another team waiting for us.
Oh, you have to be kidding me.
Marissa tensed, pausing in her step, her hands tightening.
Well, well. I knew we were having another team join us, but this is a pleasant surprise.
Rupert Kent stood up from where he'd been eating and turned to regard us. From the sound of his tone, he was still intent on harassing Mara, even after she'd beaten the tar out of him earlier in the year. Without thinking, I laid a hand on Mara's shoulder. She turned to me with a look of surprise, then took a breath and relaxed. She gave me a nod of thanks, then I put my hand down. It was a simple exchange, positive, without any words needed. I wasn't used to that, but it was nice. I couldn't focus on that, though. I turned to look at the rest of the group. I recognized them just as easily, aside from the second-year student with them. Luraya Marshall was an elementalist, much like Rupert and Patrick. She was sitting next to Kira Dyson, her usual dueling partner, and one of the few duelists with the Shadow Attunement. I knew the other two even better. Desmond Viers was a Shaper and currently one of the top students in the dueling class. He probably had the highest overall score, maybe tied with Marissa. The last was Roland Royce, my old friend, who had been raised to be my brother's retainer. I hadn't seen him in months. From Sarah's expression, she was equally surprised, but she rushed past the rest of us to give him a hug. They'd been getting close at the beginning of the school year. Was there something going on there? None of my business.
Well, it seems like some of you are already acquainted, but let's do introductions regardless.
Kathy clapped her hands together.
Let's form a circle and say our names.
We followed her instructions. The second-year student for their team introduced himself as Jordan Jalden. He was apparently a mender. Kathy didn't say the name of her attunement, and her mark wasn't visible.
Great!
Kathy beamed.
Now that we all know each other, on to the fun part. Your mission briefing!
Literally, no one else, including the other second-year student, seemed excited about this fun part.
Okay, so, for this scenario, you're going to be sent into a simulated version of the Unclaimed Lands. Your two teams will be working together to deliver a shipment of useful supplies to a new settlement, which consists of several other teams of students. The supplies you'll be carrying are real, and they're going to be useful things the other students will want, so don't lose them or let them get broken.
Kathy folded her hands together.
Naturally, that means that there will be other teams working to steal or destroy your stuff. You see, you'll be moving through territory known to be inhabited by servants of the Tales of Orochi. You all know who they are?
There were a series of uncertain noises from the group, but Patrick jumped right in.
They're a cult that worships the children of the god Hydra. They're not as common as tyrant cultists, but they've got a lot of influence. There are 9 Tales of Orochi, and they're—
That's good enough,
Kathy waved a hand.
They're a cult, and some of the other students are on their team. The Tales group will be harassing the settler groups, including your own team. We have a map that should lead us to the settlement. If we get there in time, which we should if you don't mess this up, you'll be given another assignment by one of the teachers there. Any questions?
Marissa stood up from her chair, looking nervous.
Why have we got 2 teams here? This, tough one?
Good question! No! There's a good reason for that, but you'll probably figure it out when you read your individual assignments, which you have, all of you. I'll get those handed out in a few.
Individual assignments? Roland asked.
Oh, yeah. You should probably know the rules for those.
Each of you has individual tasks you've been assigned in addition to the main task, which is delivering the goods. Those individual tasks are just as important for your score, maybe more so. It'll say in your papers. This is important, though. You can't show your individual tasks to anyone else. You can ask for help with them, but you are not allowed to show your papers to other students. And no leaving your papers around so people can find them either. That's cheating.
Why wouldn't we be able to show our assignments to someone? Unless... Oh. Rash, this is not going to be good.
Any more questions?
Sarah stood up. Will you and Jordan be traveling with us?
Yep, but we won't be helping you unless there's a good reason. Some of your individual tasks may allow you to ask us for specific kinds of help. It'll say in your papers if so.
One more question. Do you have any estimates on how long our particular assignments will last?
Jordan stood up. That depends on how long you last. My friend neglected to mention this, but you'll each be wearing a sigil monitor on your shield sigils during this exercise. If your shield sigil is depleted, it will send us a signal and your location.
He raised a handheld device that looked like a compass, but marked with several runes. If that could locate something based on a signal from another item, I definitely wanted to study it later. Jordan pocketed the item and continued his explanation.
If that happens, we'll find you and make sure you're safe, then signal the soaring wings to send someone to escort you back to safety. You'll be done with the test. Needless to say, if this happens before you've finished your objective, you fail the test. If it happens after you've finished some things and not others, well, you'll just have to see how you score.
Any more questions?
I was thinking about some, but I decided to wait until after I'd read my assignment. If my suspicions were accurate, it was potentially advantageous for me to avoid asking questions that would give the entire group information. Kathy retrieved a box containing several sealed envelopes. Each envelope was addressed to one of us. I accepted mine, then went and found a place to sit as far from everyone else as possible to open it. Cadence, Corin. Platoon designation, Serpent Epsilon. Primary assignment, delivery of goods to designated settlement. When you have reached the designated location, goods will be checked by your contact. See student supervisor for information on mission contact. Secondary assignment, discover and eliminate spider infiltrators. I had to take a deep breath before I could continue reading. Resh. Yep, there it is. I kept reading. Your platoon and or the platoon you have been paired with has been infiltrated by one or more members of Spider Division. Some but not all of your platoon members have been made aware of this. The Spider Division members will attempt to sabotage your primary mission, as well as the missions of other teams. For the purpose of this scenario, they are considered infiltrators working for the Tales of Orochi organization, who serve as the antagonists for your team during the exercise. Even if you do not discover your primary mission being actively sabotaged, the Spider Division members may be collecting information that can be passed to other spider groups already at the settlement, or coordinating with other Tales of Orochi teams. For example, providing them with location on your information and capabilities. As such, you should be alert at all times and attempt to discover and eliminate these agents at your soonest opportunity. You will be rewarded for each spider you successfully eliminate. That includes spider operatives in your own platoons, as well as spider agents that you discover in other platoons if applicable. You will be penalized if the spiders that are associated with your platoons successfully achieve their goals. You will be penalized if any non-spider members of your team are eliminated. This penalty will be doubled if they are eliminated directly by a spider. As a reminder, you may not show this paperwork to other members of your platoon. You may discuss it verbally, however, or attempt to prove your case through other means. Good luck. Now I had many questions. Unfortunately, I'd been right. The more questions I ask here and now, the more information I'd be giving the one or more spider agents in our group. This was not the type of thing I was looking forward to. Social engineering exercises were much closer to Sarah's, or even Patrick or Jin's, skill set.
which of course immediately made me wonder if they were the spider agents. Reshit. I wasn't going to be able to trust anyone, was I? That was probably the point. A classic exercise in figuring out who I could trust. That might have been fun if I wasn't already actively playing that kind of game every day of my ordinary life. I pulled Kathy to the side before we left the building to ask her a couple quick questions. My assignment refers to elimination, and you mentioned we'd be sent home if our sigils were damaged to the point that the alarm went off. What if I just took off my sigil monitor?
Not allowed.
She shook her head.
The sigil monitor is set up to send us an alert if you take the monitor off.
And if I disable that function or turned the shield monitor off entirely?
Wow, you really like to skirt the rules. I like the cut of your jib, kid. But no, that's cheating. Sorry.
I pondered that. What about taking the sigil off entirely? I mean, we're going to have to take it off for brief periods of time when we bathe and change and stuff anyway.
Sure, people will take them off for a few minutes here or there. That's guaranteed. But you've got to sleep with them on, and you can't take them off just to avoid a way of being eliminated. Sorry. If we find you doing that on purpose, you'll be sent home. And I'd advise you to bathe with your shield on out here, even if that means just pinning it to your undergarments and keeping them on. There are actual monsters out there, and you need to stay safe. I'll tell the others the same.
Kathy paused.
Look, I know you've got to be nervous about your test scores. Everyone wants to pass. I want you to pass. Sometimes finding little tricks can make a test easier. I get that. But here, you're working with a team. You're not doing them right if you're just trying to save yourself. Put that brain of yours to work on the mission.
I nodded. She had a point. A point that I fully intended to ignore. My questions had never been about trying to save myself in the first place. I just wanted to know what variables I had to work with in terms of methods of triggering and avoiding elimination. I couldn't ask her too many more questions or she'd get suspicious of what I was up to.
One last question. I brought my own supplies, but does this facility have a general store or something we can go to before we leave? Yep. You'll all get a chance to stop there and buy a few things before we head out if you need to.
Excellent. I was beginning to form the foundations of a plan. I'd brought a ton of supplies in the Jaden box, but if I had a chance to shop, I had a few more things I wanted to pick up now that I knew what we were up against. I headed back to the group. I couldn't work while I was being observed, but I could think. And, if I was going to stay ahead of all my potential adversaries, I had quite a bit of planning to do. As promised, we had a chance to shop for about an hour before we departed. Most people bought extra food, warm clothing, or other small supplies they'd forgotten at home. I bought other things. I considered trying to find the time to talk to some of my platoon members in private, but we didn't have a good window to do it while no one from the other team was around. From the suspicious glances I was picking up, though, I could tell at least a few people had been given similar information to my own. Jin and Roland, in particular, seemed to be paying a lot of attention to everyone else, but I couldn't tell how much of that was just my own mind playing games. I couldn't trust Jin about anything after what he'd done, and he'd always been mysterious. And Roland had been missing for weeks. That clearly could have been because he'd been assigned to the Spider Division and decided to prioritize those assignments. Of course, it could have just meant he dropped out of the dueling class elective. That was the only class we shared, and I didn't keep track of him outside of class. And even though those two seemed to be paying a lot of attention to everyone else, that didn't mean they were spiders. It could just as easily mean they were like me, and they'd been given an assignment to find the spiders. I'd be able to check them for visible tells if I confronted them, but that would let the spiders know I was aware of their presence, and that would make me a target. I had to weigh the advantages of talking to any individual person against the risk that they would be a danger if they were a spider. Or, of course, I could find another way to check that couldn't easily be traced back to me. That would be my first move. An hour later, we headed into the forest, now escorting a pair of wagons drawn by horses. The wagons were filled with boxes of supplies. Given the sheer number, I counted 12 large crates per wagon, I suspected the settlement had to consist of a large number of students, probably 100 or more. Since we'd presumably be joining the settlement once we arrived, it was in our best interest to ensure the boxes were intact, even aside from it being responsible for some of our points. My first order of business was gathering information. I activated my attunement and scanned the group. Marissa, Patrick, and I currently registered as Carnelian. Sarah's aura was colorless. She'd been Carnelian, but with her mana level as low as it was, she was registering as Quartz right now. Presumably, she'd hit Carnelian again soon, but that did mean she'd have to be careful during this assignment. Jin's aura was clear. I knew he was stronger than that, but he was apparently playing it safe and keeping his shroud suppressed while others were around. On the other team, Roland and Kira were showing up as Carnelian. The other three were either Quartz or suppressing their shrouds. I had a hard time seeing any aura on Lariya Marshall at all. Either her attunement was particularly weak, or maybe she had an item to conceal it. I did see a couple auras from magical items on her belt, but they were faint too. Both of the second-year students had brilliant orange auras that meant they were Sunstone level. That put them toward the top of their class. Hitting Sunstone as a student was relatively rare. I presumed we were assigned two of the stronger students because our own aggregate mana levels were higher than average. We also happened to be two of the groups consisting of finalists from Teft's dueling class. That probably wasn't a coincidence. Maybe Teft had selected our two teams to match us against each other. That sounded like the type of thing he'd do. Aside from that, I picked up on several magical auras from items the other students were carrying. I knew the equipment for my team pretty well. No surprises there. We hadn't coordinated with Jin, but he was carrying at least some of the things I'd enchanted for him earlier in the year. The other team had fewer magical items, but I did notice a handful. Roland seemed particularly well outfitted. I could see several Carnelian-level auras emanating from things he was wearing, including a pair of canes and holsters on his hips. Upgraded dueling canes, most likely. Was he an enchanter himself? That actually would be a pretty good explanation for why he'd been skipping so many dueling classes. Dueling was hard as an enchanter, and he might have needed to spend time on studying runes and manufacturing items for other classes. I couldn't confirm it right this second, but maybe it was worth asking him directly at some point. He hadn't volunteered the information, but it was a reasonably harmless question. I also tried to pay attention to the location of everyone's attunement marks. That would be relevant if I had to figure out how to fight them later. And there was very little chance I was getting out of this without a fight. With that information in mind, I turned off my attunement and headed to the front of the wagons, where most of the others were walking. The second-year students were the ones driving the wagons themselves. This was good for saving us the trouble, but it also meant that all the students were free to roam and observe each other. Pulling someone to the side was possible, but if I did it this early on, it would be conspicuous. I decided to wait just a little bit before trying to have any private conversations. Instead, I found a cluster of people looking at the map toward the front of the group.
"Looks like it's about 30 miles to the settlement," Kira was saying. "Wagons are going pretty slow. What do you think it'll take? 2 days to get there?"
"Low as a day and a half if we keep up a good pace. Depends on how much we stop to rest. Could be more like 3 days if we get it by monsters,"
Sarah replied.
"Or tails."
"What kind of precautions can we take for that?" Patrick asked.
"Might want one or two people riding in each of the wagons at all times. The weight probably wouldn't slow them down much, and they'd be able to defend against any invisible attackers that show up inside,"
Kira offered. Patrick frowned.
"Are invisible attackers really what we're worried about?"
"It's what I'd do,"
Kira grinned, cracking her knuckles.
"I know you'd probably just throw a fireball at them or something, but we've got 3 elementalists and a shaper. I'm not worried about conventional assaults. Sneak thieves are far more likely to do us damage."
Not to be too underconfident here, but I don't think having a bunch of elementalists means we're guaranteed to stop magical attack from a distance," Patrick argued. They could hit us from any angle at any time.
I was hesitant to jump into the conversation. I wasn't particularly comfortable dealing with the number of strangers that were around, especially with the knowledge that we had a traitor among us. But I needed to contribute, and not just to finding the spiders.
I can enchant the wagons with shields when we stop for the night. Kira turned to me.
You can do that to wagons?
Sure. I can enchant pretty much anything as long as it has a high enough mana capacity. Most types of wood don't hold as much as metal, but given the sheer size...
Okay, I get it. Good. Shields on the wagons. What about the boxes?
I nodded. There are a lot of them, but I could probably get to them eventually. I paused, considering. Assuming there's nothing volatile inside the enchantments would interact with. Kira frowned.
Define volatile.
Some particular materials react badly to enchantments, but I was thinking more in terms of other magical items. I doubt we're shipping a bunch of magic swords, but there's a good chance there are alchemical goods in some of the boxes. If that's the case...
Case? That's a box pun.
Patrick snickered. It hadn't been, but I chuckled anyway. I continued my explanation.
The simple answer is that I probably shouldn't enchant any boxes with magic stuff in them. Other boxes are fine, assuming I have enough mana to get to all of them. Might not be able to tonight.
Okay. That's good. Useful. Should we start putting people in the wagons now?
Kira turned to Sarah.
Sarah shrugged.
Probably a little early to bother with it. We're not likely to be attacked immediately.
How do we know? Patrick asked.
We can't say for sure, but that would imply a team has been camping out waiting for someone to leave the base. That's possible, but it doesn't sound efficient. Unless they were told our deployment times.
Sarah brushed a strand of hair out of her eyes.
Although it would be nice to get an idea of what level of information our attackers do have, and what their goals are. That might help give us some idea of when they might strike. Don't think we've got much of a lead on that, unless someone's got info on the tails in their packet.
Kira looked hopeful, but we all shook our heads.
Didn't think so, but it was worth checking. I'll ask the others later. Maybe someone has a lead. In the meantime, I suspect our best bet is to take a look at the map for likely ambush points. Maybe here?
Sarah pointed a finger at a crossroads a few miles down the road.
Or any similar area. Or just right near the settlement. If they're supposed to be harassing any team, as opposed to our team in specific, their best bet is to set up near the settlement itself. Good point. We should definitely plan to be on the alert when we get close then, and any time we're nearing a crossroads or another major point of interest.
Kira waved at the map.
You holding on to that for now?
Sarah nodded.
I'd like to, if you don't mind. I'd like to study it for a few hours at least. I can pass it to you later tonight? Sounds good. I'll go check in with the others.
Kira waved as she walked away.
It was just Patrick, Sarah, and me walking with the map at that point. I glanced to the side to check on Marissa, just to make sure that Rupert wasn't harassing her. Fortunately, she just seemed to be chatting with Jin.
I still didn't trust Jin entirely, but Marissa could take care of herself.
She was the only one of us I suspected could reliably handle Jin in a physical fight. As long as she was watching him, I didn't have to be hyper-vigilant about what he was up to. With that worry dismissed for the moment, I had other worries to contend with. I already had a few strategies in mind, but it wasn't time to deploy any of them just yet. Any sort of traitors would be likely to act either during the middle of an attack by the tails, during a monster attack, or while most of the students were asleep. If there were multiple of them, they'd also be looking for chances to communicate with each other. My opportunities to counter them were going to be similar. Anytime people were distracted or asleep, I could try to gather or place information. Anytime I could get a single person alone, I could try to interrogate them, directly or indirectly. I had a few key decisions to make before I made any major moves. One, I needed to decide if I could trust any of my friends implicitly. This wasn't a question of whether or not I could know if they were spiders. I decided early on that I couldn't prove that immediately. Rather, It was a question of if I trusted anyone enough to cooperate with them, regardless of whether or not they were a spider. That decision was difficult, because I did not know to what extent we would have mutually exclusive winning conditions. Was it possible for both the spiders and the non-spiders on the team to earn enough points to count as a success? If so, no problem. I could work with the spiders to ensure we each had a partial success and enough points to graduate. If not, that would largely disqualify any sort of cooperative plan. I was not going to let myself fail for a friend, especially if that would mean sabotaging the majority of the group to do so. So I needed to know if a cooperative victory was possible before making any decisions in that regard. Unfortunately, I had no way of knowing their goals yet, and I also didn't know the exact details of how we were scored. That meant I'd need to anticipate how the grading process worked and try to bet around that if I used that strategy. I judged that strategy to be too much of a risk, at least for the moment. My second decision to make was whether or not I was going to pretend to be a spider. I didn't know if the spiders were aware of each other's identities or not. Similarly, I didn't know if they were aware that people knew there were traitors in the group. If they already knew each other, it was unlikely to work. Period. If the spiders didn't know who each other were, and they were also unaware that there were people who knew about them, pretending to be a spider and luring out the other spiders somehow was potentially a viable strategy. If they didn't know each other, but they did know that other people knew about them, it was possible I could still pretend to be an additional undisclosed spider. For the moment, I considered the risks of that strategy too high for the potential rewards, but it was definitely an option to play that way later on. We continued walking for a few hours. I chatted with people a bit, but not about anything important. Desmond Viers was apparently the leader for the other team, but Kira was giving all the orders, and he didn't seem to care. I didn't read too much into that. It wasn't suspicious on its own. Since Kira was taking the role of coordinating the other team, she spent a lot of her time talking to Sarah. They decided that we'd just have one person riding in each wagon at a time after realizing just how little room there was for anyone to sit with the boxes. The first shift was Marissa and Jin, since their attunements weren't built for ranged combat. The leaders decided they wanted as many of the ranged combatants as possible outside, just in case they had to deflect magical attacks. The hours pressed on without incident, at least at first. We stopped for a midday meal after several hours of walking. Kathy took care of feeding the horses. The rest of us strategized. I found Sarah talking to Kira again. Sarah waved me over.
We're talking about sending Veniv to scout ahead.
I considered that. That's definitely a way to get us some information. I'd be worried about how visible he'd be if he's flying, though. If he comes back to you to report, it could give away our location. Kira pointed up, and I followed her gesture. The tree cover was pretty thick.
People don't usually look up very often, and even if they do, they're going to have a hard time seeing through that canopy.
I nodded in agreement. Fair. Might be wise to have him circle around and land behind us or something, though, then fly low to the ground to get back to us, just in case.
I can do that,
Sarah replied.
He's probably going to be happy just to be able to do anything. It's been ages since I've summoned him for anything other than training.
Can he even tell? I mean, does he sense the passage of time when he's not summoned? If he could, that implied a degree of consciousness, even in an unsummoned state. That was strange. Sarah seemed to come to the same conclusion based on how her face contorted as she considered the answer.
He always sounds like he's complaining about how long it's been, but maybe that's just his personality. I can't see how he could be keeping track of anything unless he's summoned.
She shook her head.
Anyway, not important right now. We can worry about the details of summoning theory later.
Right. I was curious, though. Okay, you summoning him right now?
May as well. We'll probably be in a static location for a while. It shouldn't take him long to scout the next 10 miles or so of the road.
Kira nodded.
I concur. Go ahead.
Sarah clasped her hands together.
Veniv, I summon you.
The winged man of stone appeared at her side a moment later. He was notably taller than last time, meaning, of course, that he was back to being human height. I admit to having been slightly disappointed. The tiny Veneve was adorable.
Ah, excellent. You finally decided to make use of me.
Veneve beamed, glancing around.
What have we here? A forest? A few lovely maidens?
Fewer maidens than you'd think, Carvancy,
Kira replied.
Unless you're talking about yourself.
Oh, I like this one. She's got bite.
Veneve turned his head to Sarah.
Can I keep her?
Sarah folded her arms.
Veneve, don't be creepy.
Veneve put a hand over his heart.
Creepy? Banish that thought from your mind, dear. I'm the epitome of wit and charm. One should not mistake my debonair.
Quit it.
She poked a finger into his abdomen.
We're on a timer here.
Aren't you always?
He glanced around, then took a deep breath.
Very well. I can appreciate the change of scenery, at least. What is this, Vanway?
Sarah nodded.
Surprised you know that.
Unlike some people, I have a broad body of experience. And a broad body in general.
He flexed his wings. And his muscles. It was strange that his body moved like flesh, even though it seemed to consist of stone-like material. How did that work? Did he have ordinary muscles beneath that hardened skin? I pondered that briefly while Sarah filled him in on his assignment.
Very well. I shall miss you while I'm away, my summoner. And you as well, Ms...
I'm not telling you my name,
Kira replied.
That's an unusual name to go by. Can I call you Not Telling for short?
Just go, Veneve.
Sarah waved a hand.
Shoo.
Veneve rolled his eyes.
Always spoiling my fun. Very well, I'll be off.
He took a running start, which was entirely unnecessary as far as I could tell, and jumped into the air, his wings beating and taking him into the sky. With that distraction dealt with, I debated talking to Sarah about what I knew. Unfortunately, Kira was still with her, and Kira was the single most likely person to be a spider in my mind. Kira was both powerful for her age and had the Shadow Attunement, which was the classic skill set for an infiltrator. Moreover, she was making executive decisions for her team in spite of not officially being the team leader. Perhaps that was just an assertive personality at work, but it was certainly possible she was manipulating things deliberately so that the spiders would have an advantage. The fact that Sarah was sharing information with her so openly was a concern. Could Sarah be a spider herself? It felt unlikely to me. I had a hard time believing any of my friends could have gone this far into the year without telling me something like that. But Sarah had always been ambitious and goal-oriented. She had a keen strategic mind even when we were young. Could someone have discovered her talents before the year started and selected her for the spider division? Or maybe I was looking at this wrong. Could spiders be selected later in the year? Even if she hadn't been a spider at the beginning, could she have been tapped for that role later on? That would have made it more plausible that she hadn't told me, especially if she'd only been selected recently. Anyone I wanted to share my information with would be a risk, but it was a greater risk if I shared with someone who I considered better at social games and manipulation than myself. Sarah definitely fit that, more so than anyone else here. That meant that in spite of feeling closest to her, she was the most dangerous person to confide in. Was that risk worth the potential for her help? I didn't know. How could I verify if she was a spider or not? Or anyone else, for that matter? The simple answer was that I needed to get a hold of everyone's paperwork. They weren't allowed to share, but that didn't mean I couldn't steal it. There were a couple problems with that plan. One, I wasn't a trained thief. Basic tactics like doing it at night weren't beyond me, but everyone would be on their guard here. Two, if they were spiders, they could have destroyed their orders or even altered them. Three, their orders may not have ever contained anything to out them as spiders in the first place. Those points made trying to search through everyone's paperwork a risk that had a high potential for turning up nothing. But it was still my best lead, at least for the moment. What could I do to improve my odds? I looked around, considering everyone present. Was there anyone I could trust implicitly